manipulative form of the world of good and evil. The law of information, incrementation of energy. What is next?
In this diagram, I am suggesting that the nature or the reality moves from matter into spirit. And in this process, we have a cosmogenesis, a biogenesis, and a homogenesis. And each one of them has their own characteristics. One main characteristic of cosmogenesis is based on the law of conservation of energy. The one of biogenesis has to do with the law of concentration of energy. The biological is the ability of nature to concentrate energy in very dense packages, like any animals can tell us. By moving from the biogenetic to the homogenetic, you see that the law is not anymore of conservation or concentration, but it's of incrementation, because spirit, which is the energy I'm talking here, is multiplying itself. So it's by feeding on those two previous, let's say, levels of reality, life becomes an incrementational spirit, which is what I'm suggesting here.
Do you have any questions you would like to ask?
This sounds like Thierry Desjardins. Some of his ideas are very similar. Are we going to naturally evolve this way, or may we not? Do you see this as something the human condition is evolving toward necessarily, or is only a few of us? Will we do it before we wipe ourselves out, is what I'm asking.
Well, the more we move from this, let's say, level of reality into this level of reality, the more the decisions are conscious, so that the responsibility of this universe is different from the responsibility of this universe, and which is also different from this one. You have an incarnation of self-responsibility from total randomness and what you might call total irresponsibility to total willfulness and total responsibility. In order to somehow illustrate this idea of if I put down this screen, do you mind?
The seed, the vegetal, the animal, the human, and the social seed originate a cycle of gathering and organizing matter in a progressively complex and responsive organism, the living. The living is then a cooperative process, not a disintegrated one, death. It is an impulsive process, not an explosive one. It is a miniaturization process, favoring the ever more complex interactions, making the becoming. Therefore, in any given system, the liveliest quantum is also the most complex. Two, in any given system, the most complex quantum is also the most miniaturized.
With this, I was trying to illustrate the reasons why I believe that those two sentences are so fundamental. When you are dealing with the living process, which we are dealing with also in an urban system, you are not dealing with an explosive process, you are dealing with an implosive process. Because the seed stands for the most typical kind of an implosive process. It's a gathering of things, it's not a scattering of things. And in a way, the same should happen or will happen, and has been happening in many other manifestations of life, and including the urban somehow organization that we are going to.
Process and growth. Process is a manipulation by by the outer decision. Process belongs to the technological. Growth is manipulation by inner decision. Growth belongs to the bio-mental. Process is a performance of technology which acts by way of oversimplification. Growth is a performance of the bio-mental which acts by way of complexification. Process defines change. Growth defines engrossment. Contemporary man is mesmerized by change and starved by lack of engrossment.
This speaker in the center is connected up. If anyone wants to come up and ask questions, there are two people, this man and the other, that have questions. Do you want these slides left on?
I'd like to ask some questions about that. You can go back. Can you see that?
Are these conceptions that you are talking about a consequence of your type of architecture? Are these conceptions a consequence of your type of architecture?
No, they came together somehow. The architectural helped to define the ideas, and ideas helped to define the architecture.
Do you think of your structures as landforms which people can create their own individual communities and individual living spaces in? Or do you feel your structures will define communities in individual living spaces?
The thing that I'm pointing at mostly in those very semantic models is that what we need is a better topography for society, which means being the landscape that we are presented by nature, but two-dimensional. We need to organize our actions more three-dimensionally, not because of three-dimensionality, but because the third dimension introduces more flow and more possibility of organizing your life around things. So what I'm suggesting is that we should be able to wrap our living quarters around the institution that we have been inventing and creating for a long time, which means that physically we have to have all the institutions of which I said are part now of our civilization in such a position to be very swiftly reachable and enriched and used by the city dwellers. And that means that practically you have to do this in physical terms, and you can do it only by using the third dimension. But this topography doesn't have to define, let's say, the private life of the city dwellers. Can define only a landscape into which you can build your own private life. So instead of having a house that is sold to you or rented or leased, you can have a space that you can, into which you can build your own environment.
But on a community scale, will this work also, where a community can build its own environment within your landform that you have established three-dimensionally?
Yeah, the family can be seen as a traditional group of, father, mother, and children can be seen as a more tribal kind of system, which means that instead of having a small family or a large family that finds its own environment, you can have a group that finds its own environment.
What I'm really saying is what will separate your buildings from a track house where it has been defined three-dimensionally, but it doesn't give the individual his creativity. Doesn't give the individual a chance to create his own environment, which will establish his identity, which we've lost.
Well, I don't know if we are going to go back to the artisan or craftsman, position where each person somehow wants a small building in some environment. For many people, that's very important. For many people, even in the future might be almost impossible to not even be interested in doing it. So we should have a chance of having both being able to buy your own environment or to get it ready-made, or else to build it and to define yourself. But what we need the same time it is a system, a predetermined or a pre-existing system that can really serve those subsystems which we are talking about, the planetary center or the group center. And if you don't have those larger structures doing that, we are not going to be able to organize our lives. We are going to have a very sub-standard from a point of view of civilization, say, kind of one.
I mean, one of the statements, the last statement on the left slide, you were talking about the difference between process and a growth. Mm-hmm. And I was curious if you could like clarify the difference between a mere process and a growth, and between mere change and growth.
When we talk of change at this day and age, we seem to be concentrating on what physically happens around us. And very often when that happens, whatever is somehow connected with this physical development has very, very little to do with the growth of the individual. It has very much to do with what I call process, which is just a transformation of matter into something else, into something in another kind of organized matter, but is not really going to engross the spirit, which is what I mean by engrossment. If we want to somehow grow instead of just change, we have to check into our society, the physical environment that we are defining, and see how much of what we do is for the sake of change and how much is for the sake of engrossment. And I think most of the things that we do now is for the sake of change, not for the sake of engrossment. And one has to do with the inner, the engrossment has to do with the inner man, the other one has to do with the outer man. And more and more sacrificing the inner for the outer, we end up by being quite materialistic oriented, as we know, and quite superficially oriented. And as a consequence, we are dealing with problem of waste or pollution, to name the two most fashionable, but mainly with the destruction of the inner life. Amen.
So basically, change is a characteristic of engrossment, but engrossment is more encompassing. It would encompass change, but it would be a more human.
Change has very much to do with the physical alteration. So you can say that when you mine material and then you make it into metal, for instance, or you make it into who knows what, you are producing a change. And engrossment has to do with a quantum change somehow from matter into spirit. And you can say it still is a materialization of matter somehow. It is still is a special kind of matter. So in that sense, you might say that there is the beginning of a spiritual touch when raw matter becomes steel, but it's such a infinitesimal change that you're still dealing with pretty much with deterministic and statistical kind of reality. So in order to move from this deterministic sector of reality into a less deterministic, into the willful sector of reality, you must try to work out not just change, but what we call growth.
Seems like to me right now one of the main problems would be people problems, like you can
and a large number of people to live together harmoniously if they have a common cause, like a submarine crew or a religious society. But I'm from most of the communities and communes I've seen working together, they usually break up, not for, well, for economics, but lots of the, most of the reasons are interpersonal kinds of things. Do you foresee any kinds of problems with that with Arkansanti or communities which perhaps aren't as, maybe Arkansanti will attract a like-minded group, but do you see people problems, I mean, relating problems? Is your architecture going to provide for, to prevent the destruction of it because of human relationship problems?
Well, I'm not advocating a commune life at all. I consider my privacy very important, and so I consider your privacy very important. At the same time, there is a public life, which really makes civilization. Without public life, you don't have anything. Because we are, as we are cooperative animals, we are, by definition, public animals. So we need to be able to move from the private into the public and vice versa. And both those environments have to be rich and rewarding and engrossing. So that what we need is a certain physical structure that can allow for this. What we are doing now is not, we are not defining such a structure, because if you take suburbia, for instance, it is a typical kind of segregated environment where the public life is just about zero. So the need for the introduction in the context of reality of both the private and the public demands structural systems which are quite different from the one we have now. And this is really, at the end, it's a very physical question. It's not, you don't have to go into metaphysics to understand that unless you have a certain instrument, you don't have the performance that you're seeking. If you don't have a piano or a guitar or the vocal cord, you don't have music, period. If you don't have a typewriter, or you don't have a pen, or you don't have a stick, you don't have writing, period. So you always need a certain instrument in order to have a certain performance. And the instrument that we have now for society is so dismal, is so unfit, that society itself is suffering very, very fundamentally.
Are there any examples which even that are already in existence? I was thinking of the Hancock Center, which has stores, housing, things like that. What would be the main difference between the Hancock Center and Arkansanti, and how would yours be different?
Maybe at the end the difference would be, and I'm not saying this because I think Arkansanti would succeed, but the main difference would be that the Hancock would be matter-oriented and Arkansanti would be spirit-oriented. Now, I'm not saying that it would be succeeding, but that would be the difference if it was succeeding. Because I really believe that the most subtle but the most powerful process that is going on under our eyes is not to make life to survive better, but to make matter into spirit. I think that the answer will be in adding up the cost of, for instance, Phoenix, and then compare this cost with a Phoenix which would be, let's say, contained in one cubic miles, just to say it quickly. And then we might find out that it's the opposite. It's not that the Phoenix of today allows that much change. I think the Phoenix of today is a gigantic structure. But at the same time, it's a very rigid structure.
And it's very rigid, mainly because it's so expensive that it paralyzes life. So I think we can come up with a Phoenix which is much more, can be more swiftly rearranged and can be much cheaper in its own physical cost. The other aspect is that the Phoenix of today is very much of a segregated kind of environment. And one reason is just a very physical question of matter and energy being organized and transported and tied together and interconnected and so on. If we forget that we are coming from matter and we depend very much on physical demands, we are somehow fooling ourselves in thinking that we can do things that we cannot do. And matter and energy are very fundamental to whatever we do, biologically, socially, culturally, and so on. And evidently, Phoenix is one of the ways that nature would never choose to subside and to develop and to somehow become better if nature had a choice. It would not be a phoenix, it would be a solid phoenix. And that doesn't mean that this is a simple thing of piling up phoenix. It becomes more complex because the results would have to be more lively in order to be positive. But it's quite evident that a phoenix of 200 or 300 or 400 square miles is not going to be functioning. It's not going to give the answer that we as a phoenix dwellers have the right to ask from this machine we call phoenix. So the sluggishness and the poverty and the dreadfulness of phoenix is in part caused by the gigantic structure that tries to sustain phoenix and doesn't succeed. And you have to think of what phoenix is, not just in terms of housing or offices and production center, markets and so on, but the asphalt, the concrete, the underground networks and so on. But basically this fact that there is the communication channels are interrupted and the transportation channels are becoming worse and worse. Yes?
You said it's called the city will integrate the people and they each have their own cubicle, I can see. But what if the man, say, just take a Howard Hughes type, for example, can you integrate him into a cube the same size of the cube that I'm going to have?
Well, no, you're dealing more than physical spaces. Now you're dealing with the social problems, political problems, and moral problems. My suggestion is that through a certain structural system, you can suggest better ways of going about social, political, and economic problems. But there is those that I was suggesting here were not sufficient reason or sufficient condition when there were necessary conditions. I think that is necessary if we want to have a better society, to have a better container for society, definitely. Because it tends to desegregate society physically, instrumentally, functionally, and so on. But the decision of not being segregated is a finally and a moral decision, an ethical decision, is not a physical decision. But the physical can go quite far into desegregating the non-physical. Yes? Well, it would depend somehow in the definition of freedom. I tend to define what we call freedom now, license, in the sense that I do my own business and never mind your business. That's none of your business. Well, this is hardly, it's not really freedom. It's the indifference of one center of life toward the another center of life that supposedly is with him or with her or with it on the same spaceship, as Fuller calls it. And this indifference is not very realistic, evidently. So that I'm not suggesting that we should take communism or socialism at as a total doctrine and go on from there. But it's quite evident that the free enterprise needs revision in a very drastic way because it's not working. Free enterprise has to be freed from many things, including greed, self-centeredness, fear, who knows what. So free enterprise is not free for the moment. It's slave of many of the less enticing aspects of the soul of man, I guess. Yes?
Could there develop a vision of people, like say the people who live in Arkansanti, could they separate themselves completely from the rest of your other cities, so to speak, if they were built? Would there be this separation because Arkansanti would be their complete home? They wouldn't need to go elsewhere.
Well, there is an aspect of pride for what you belong to, which is evidently has a very thin. There's a very thin separation between the positive aspect of being having a pride for what you belong to and hatred and antagonism with other institutions, with other groups that they don't belong to your group. But it's, at the same time, I think it's very important to believe in what you are and what you do and what you belong to. Otherwise, where are the values of life if everything is gray and to be there, to be here, to be elsewhere is the same thing. So I think that a town that believes in what it stands for, I think it's very important. It's also a dangerous thing if this town becomes too ingrained into its own pride and starts to fight the next town because it believes that it's better. But to be able to identify with a community and to be able to identify the community with a structure, with a physical environment, I think it's very important. Yes. Yes, if I don't think we can start by destroying what we have because that's the only thing we have and we should try to somehow keep it up and improve it if we can. At the same time, we are starting to realize that what we have is not good enough for the future. I mean, we cannot really see Phoenix as the great, the end of the line as far as civilization goes. So I think we should do both, try to maintain what we have and to improve it as much as we can. At the same time, we should try to come up with new things which are probably going to be better. So it would be a question of two ways of approaching the environment for society. One is to develop, keep going with what we have, and the other one is to develop new ideas, and the best one would succeed. So as you were saying, suppose that you build an ecology that works best, well, then people would start to demand environments of that kind. So you would have a slow evolution from one system to another system. So it would be an evolutionary process. It would not be a revolution or a bloody revolution. It would just be that instead of having developments as we have them now, we would have developments which would be quite different. Yes?
My question was really pretty similar to that. I was wondering if you've made any provisions for urban growth, like when you fill up one of these things to capacity, then what?
I think
you fill under easily to one.
No, I think there should be limit to the size of any community anyhow. And this limit can be part of the built-in ability to develop to up to a point, and then the ability to create a new baby. So that if a community fills up a certain structural system, then it can move part of the population into a new community. Now, if you have linear developments, then you can somehow go on into two dimensions as far as developing geographically, and then plug in your three-dimensional structures, which would be new cities, let's say, or new communities. But I don't think we can say that a community can develop from 10,000 to 100, 200,000 and then millions and then billions. I don't think that's going to be good for us or for the Earth or for anything. Size doesn't have to do very much with intensity or quality. Comes the moment when size is against those things. And as we know, there are very definite sizes for biological systems just because of this reason. Well, many of those structures are, as I was saying, are a little far out, but many of them are feasible right now. And then the other side of the medal is that we should be asking technology, demanding from technology what we need, and not be told by technology what technology thinks is able to deliver for purposes which are very often not very humane. It's quite evident that if you are able to do more with less, there might be a tendency of saying, well, the Earth has this much, so if we can do more with what the Earth can afford, we are going to increase the population. But I don't think that's how things work, really. Population increase don't depend so much on what's available, but on other reasons. So much so that most of the population explosions are happening where the means of livelihood are quite limited. But having probably 5 or 6 billion of people to serve in the next decades or 20 years or so, we better find ways of serving them better. And the way we are using now are certainly the most wasteful. No, there are you know, buildings, sizable buildings that have been constructed and are withstanding some of those things, but. I would not suggest a very large ecology in a very dangerous seismic area. But at the same time, we build now large structures, especially in steel, that are withstanding that kind of natural phenomenon. Yes? Well, I make a distinction between what I call environmental information and what I call electronic information. And one, the environmental information, I think, has been with us for eons and has been really defining us morphologically, biologically, physiologically, and also mentally. The electronic information has been with us a very short time and evidently is very powerful and very important and very useful. but it should not take the place of the environmental information. We need both of them at this point. But definitely what we need desperately in order to be somehow sane mentally is the environmental information, because it's the information that comes through all our senses, including our skins, and it's the one that somehow make us into all around wholesome creatures. Because if we take the two kinds of information to extremes, we can see that the environmental information has made us up to, let's say, to the inception of civilization. If we take the electronic information purely as such, we can imagine of a creature being born, put into a white box, plugged in with all the plug-ins that we want to, and then made into a something that I tend to call a savage mind. And the savage mind is because this creature would have would know everything theoretically. It would be a beastly kind of creature because it would know anything environmentally, so the meaning of anything would be very, very strange for this creature. So if we insist, as McLuhan somehow seems to be insisting, that the electronic information is the answer, I think we are going to define a very savage kind of humanity. So what we have to do is to balance this information, which is becoming more and more elaborate and more intensified, but also more segregated. We have to reintegrate this information into the environment, which means integrate it with this kind of condition whereby each individual is really fed information not through his own eyes or his own ears only, but to all the senses, including the sense of touch, including the awareness of what danger and pleasure and so on and on is connected with our physical being, biologically speaking, not just mentally speaking. So I think that unless the environment becomes a very rich experience in its own rights, we'll tend to make very abstract human beings. And we know what the abstract mind can do. I mean, Vietnam is a typical example of the abstract mind working out solutions on paper, coming up with what we know we came up with. Yes? I don't think so. Not necessarily so, definitely. And the reason is that I'm not suggesting that we should build thousands of little homes, you know, plugged in here and there, but really produce a three-dimensional topography where you can build your own environment. At the same time, this topography, because it's wrapped around the institutions of society, it would plug you directly into those institutions, so that when you want to participate, you are able to participate. When you don't want to participate, you close that door and you open your door on your side, which is, let's say, the open landscape.
Then you think of your structures as just landforms rather than actual buildings.
Yeah, I would call them more skeletal landscapes, where you can build your own home site, your own private landscape. At the same time, we can't see the natural man of today is not the natural man of 5,000 years ago. What's natural was natural then, and we cannot really assume or presume that Reston or Colombia are going to be the answers. That's a very melancholy kind of perspective, I think. And the reason is really the basic reason, which is that in order to come up with events which are making life more lively, automatically we are going to come up with events which are more complex. It's not working the other way around. That's the way it goes, because as a fish is more complex than a protozoa, and as a cat is more complex than a fish, and we are more complex than the cat, and society is more complex than the individual, in as much as it is the sum of many individuals. So this complexification is part of the evolution of life. Yes, when something is really complex, let's say beautifully complex, it performs simply. But this simplicity is not the oversimplification of technology. It's something quite different, because as the complicated is different from the complex, technology tends to be complicated. Life tends to be complex, and there is a big difference. The difference, between process and growth. I would tend to say yes. What we are doing now, I think, in this country is really the withdrawal of society from itself. And the withdrawal comes about by using the complicated machinery of technology. So because we failed in our complexity, let's say, what we are doing, we are trying to oversimplify our problems by asking technology to solve them. And what technology does is go about this problem through processing and through change. Well, what we have to ask is to regain the simplicity of complexity through growth and through development. Okay, I have some information here if anyone wants. Last question. Yeah. Well, the models somehow are trying to suggest the final structure, as you were saying, if there is a final structure. But evidently there will be phases. So up to the point of the representation of the model, the community and the structure would develop. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm not speaking of a simple, solution of a problem, but what I'm suggesting is that you can come up with incrementations of all the elements that are making going from a small community, say, to a larger one. That's part of planning, because if we really do not accept the idea that planning is possible, then very few things are possible. But planning is part and parcel of life. I mean, I'm planning what I'm going to do this afternoon and tomorrow, et cetera, et cetera. So planning is really the texture of life itself, especially when life becomes conscious and self-conscious, like it is for us. So if we accept the idea of planning, which I don't think we can reject, then we might as well try to plan better than what we are planning now for.
Excuse me, but we'll have to stop the question. I think the schedule is...